Curtis. I'm an alcoholic. Sam asked me to speak today. This will be his 25th anniversary. He's 2 years old today. Honestly, I don't really like doing this, but I try not to say no anymore. I learned the hard way what not saying yes does for you. And my sobriety date is July the 2nd, 2017, and I have a sponsor. He has a sponsor, and I sponsor all the guys. Let's see, what was it? What it was like? What happened? What it's like now? I'm going to tell you what the weekend was like to start with. I made quite a few meetings this week. I think I made 5 meetings this week. And I had the chance to go to a bachelor party last night. And there was 10 or 15 guys at this bachelor party. And it was a good friend of mine. We've been friends since we were kids. So anyway, I went over there and things were getting kind of wild, and I was just laughing and this and that. But to make a long story short, by the end of the night, you know, of the 15, I'd say 4 or 5 were out in the parking lot puking, and 2 or 3 were falling around there. And my old buddy, he was laying on his back in the floor, and beer and liquor and shit spilled everywhere, and I reached down to help him up. And he said, "Keep your damn hands off of me." And I said to myself, "That's me right there." But the difference between me and him is today he'll be sick all day and he won't drink again for 6 months. That's just the way he has always been like that. And it was me, I'd be at least 12 deep by now, you know, trying to feel a little better. And so the other thing that happened to me was... a guy that I've been talking to called me today at lunchtime, and he was crying and carrying on, and he said, "Man," he said, "I got my second DUI the other night," and he's been in rehab 3 times. He just lost a major job. This last rehab, I seen him where I work out of town down in Lynchburg, just been about a month ago. His wife's got a restraining order, so he can't see his 2 little kids. He can't come to his own house. And he's living with his family, his mom and dad. And he called me. I said, "So what's going on that's so bad?" He said, "Well, I just had a fight with my dad, like a physical fight, because he won't let me get the gun to kill myself." And this is the day at lunchtime. And so that's, you know, those two episodes, I'm number 2. You know, he's an alcoholic. But the only difference between me and him is today is that I'm willing to come on in here and do what I got to do to feel better. He ain't willing yet. Man, he's had every opportunity anybody could ever give anybody, and he just will not do it. He's friends with a couple of us in here. And you say something about going to a meeting or something, and he just draws right up. He just will not give up. This thing works. All you have to do... it's just one thing that you have to do. It's so simple. You don't have to bring anything here to this room except willingness, you know. And I had to be willing to get up here and talk to Stephen, even though I ain't much to say. But I had to do it, because once I start saying no, I'm getting apart from the crowd, you know. And so I heard... somebody said, I think it was Bob Darrell said, you know, this is a design for living. You know, this is a design for us to live sober. And I have experience with the other way, you know, trying to live not by that. So I'll talk about that in just a minute. But anyway, so when I was 14, I had my first drink, my first drunk the first night. A buddy of mine, his sister got married, and they had 3 or 4 cases of champagne left in the basement. And the wedding and everything was over with, and I'll never forget, me and him got in there one night and got into that champagne. And I drank it till we were sick. We were both sick. And I remember I was on my hands and knees throwing up, which is most of my drinking experience. And, you know, next month or so, my buddy, he ain't drinking. I never quit after that. And I always tried to think of where I crossed the line, you know. We drink socially and it's fun and everything. And then somewhere along the way, you hear people say, well, they crossed the line. But I never could really put my finger on where I crossed the line. And then I heard a girl say here about a month ago that she don't think she ever crossed the line. She thinks she was an alcoholic from the first drink. And damn, I believe it. After thinking about it, I believe that was me. I don't remember ever just drinking to be social. I might have drank to take the edge off a little bit, but I always went to the extreme. I never drank 6 beers and just quit that I can ever remember. And even when I went back out, it was just like that. And so that's when I was 14. And from that day on, things just started for me going downhill. Though I do feel like in a social environment when I was around the ladies and stuff, I was always really shy that worked. That was the magic trick. But I just could never stop. In the family, you know, my mom, she had me going to counseling with her when I was 16, trying to figure out what was wrong with me, why my moods would swing, and I was just so aggressive towards her. She made me crazy. And looking back now, she was just looking out for me, you know. But she would do things and say things. Her and my dad were both deacons in the church, and I just wasn't gonna live like that. The more they squeezed, the more I rebelled, you know. And when I was 17, I got a DUI, and I totaled, up till I was 20, every vehicle my dad ever owned, one I totaled twice. And that's just pretty much how it went for me the whole time. After that DUI, they had the big idea that they thought that if I got away from Orange, that maybe that would be the ticket for me. And I guess a change of place. Then I didn't even know what was going on. But anyway, they came up with this idea. I go to this Christian college down in Bluefield, West Virginia, and that would be solve the problem. And so I went on down to this Christian college, and within 2 days I found the crowd that drank like I did, and joined this fraternity. And man, we were off to the races. I had one of the best times of my life down there. 2 years. I had two or three. I had 3 drunk in public. The last one, I came out of a bar with a full pitcher full of beer, and this great big old cop ran me down the road and caught me in the flower bed. They put me in jail down there in a dungeon for, I think it was 5 or 6 days, about 3 stories in the ground in Bluefield, West Virginia. And I never did get a chance to call anybody. My dad was calling around and caught up with my roommate because nobody could figure out where I was. They finally figured out where I was. And it was so far down there, he didn't feel like fooling me. He called a bail bondsman. They got me out. And I went to court and ended up, the old bail bondsman took up for me. He said, you know, this old boy, he's a good old boy. He's just got one problem. He likes to drink a little too much. You know, a little too much was an understatement by far. And so they gave me 40 hours community service. I did that for the city of Bluefield, West Virginia. And then the following week, they called me back and offered me a job. If I knew what I knew now, I would have took it. So anyway, I quit school. They basically made me leave. I drank my way out of there. I had to take a public speaking course, believe it or not, and I quit because I wanted to get up in front of a bunch of people and talk. Fear just ate me alive, man. But I get up, you know, half lit. I wasn't scared of nothing. So I come on back home and started building houses. We were doing construction, and on that construction crew, everybody drank. We could drink at lunchtime. I mean, you could drink in the morning. We had one guy we picked up, and he'd be mixing a cup in the morning when we picked him up. We had this big Suburban. We get in, and old Gordon, I'll never forget, man. He'd get in there, you know, raising hell first thing in the morning. And that's the way we worked. And he's dead now. He never did come to AA. He drank himself to death. He died. He was having a seizure. And something happened, and he had to quit for a couple days. I can't remember what it was. I think he was having some sort of surgery, and he just quit cold turkey and had a seizure. And he had never been there. Anything killed him dead. So, yeah, we're building houses and drinking like crazy, and I met up with this girl, and she never knew me not drinking, and I ended up marrying her. We were married 15 years. I do remember when we first got together, I was at a party, and she had left early, and I was fooling around with this other old girl. This was right before we got married, and because I was... because I was drinking, I fooled around with this other old girl, and that was it. She left, and so the conditions for me to get back together with her, that's when I was like 23 years old, was for me to go to AA. I didn't even know what AA was, but I did. I went to one meeting. I forgot about that. I was talking to Sam about not too long ago, and I went into this meeting in Culpeper. It was over there in the middle of town. It was a church with a big iron fence around it. I don't even know if they still have meat in it. But, and I heard him talking about the, it must have been a step meet, because I heard him talking about that four step. I said, this ain't happening to this old boy. You know, we ain't nobody going to know all this stuff. And so I didn't go back. I was 23, and I didn't go back until I was, come back until I was 38. And that's... you know, they say it's three things to get us here, and her leaving was one of the three. You know, during this time I was married, I knew that I couldn't quit. I had all these crazy ideas, these crazy hobbies I would get into, thinking, you know, if I do this, then I won't drink, or if I do this, I don't. I went out in 2000 to get my pilot's license. I said, I'll be flying, I won't drink. Soon, I got that pilot's license, and I didn't fly anymore until not more than a handful of hours, until I came to AA. I was full of fear, scared to death. Scared to death to get in that airplane. And I loved it, too, but I was just scared. And that was with everything. At the end, I was confined to my back porch. And the only thing that I would do was work and make sure that I had enough to drink for that night and into the next morning if I needed it. And my whole life revolved around that, you know. I'd get home in the evening, I'd be present enough to take care of the kids, help put them to bed and this and that, and then I was off to the races. And that's just the way I pretty much lived my life. That drinking is hard work, boy. It's hard work managing all that stuff. And she would drive me anywhere I needed to go besides to work. If we went on the weekends or something, it was just, didn't even have to ask. It was, she would get in the driver's seat, I would have a cooler, and I'd get in and ride. So anyway, she decided after 15 years she was leaving, and I was coming unglued about that. And I remember I took my boys for a four-wheeler ride. I live on a farm out there in Orange. And we went down there. We had this big bottom field and this big creek going through it. I took them down there one morning. I had already been drinking that morning. And I was telling them that me and your mom are going to have to go our separate ways. And my oldest son, Bryce, he's in college now, but he was only 10 years old at the time. And the youngest one, he didn't even know what was going on. But I remember he just cried and cried. He was just crying and crying. He said, Dad, he said, could you just cut back on that drinking a little bit? You know, I can remember like it was yesterday. He didn't even ask me to stop. He just asked me, could I slow down a little bit, cut back a little bit? 10 years old, he could see it. I could see it, but I didn't want to see it, you know? And so that was the... her leaving and him doing that. And the third thing was my health was getting bad. My blood pressure was so high, my nose was bleeding on the pillowcase every night. And she was having to change the pillowcase every other night because I was leaving a big blood spot on it. And I had been in a wreck, one of those wrecks, and busted my nose, and I had it cauterized a couple times. And I guess that high blood pressure, I don't know, but it would bleed about every other night. And she had went out and my wife had went out and bought a piece of plastic and put under the bed sheet. And put that piece of plastic under the bed sheet for about the last 3 years because I couldn't keep from wetting the bed at night. And then after I came in here, it was at least a good year. I would badmouth her for it being her fault, you know. You know, she done this, and I've worked for them and tried to take care of them, and now looking back, it was just done, man. So all that stuff we had to look at in our inventory, and I was pretty much dying, really. And I remember I called my old man. I called my dad one day. Me and him are still pretty tight. And I said, I can't do it no more. I said, he knew it, you know. He thought I was going to die. And he said, well, he said, I got a friend that went to AA. I didn't even know her. And he said that she told me that the only way you're going to get right is to get that boy. You need to take him out of hand. And he needs 90 meetings in 90 days. She said that might be the only thing that saves his life. And so my dad and I was finally, well, and Jennifer, my wife, was leaving with the kids, and health was gone. So I was pretty much beat down to nothing. I couldn't even hardly work, and I finally became willing to do that. I thought that would be the only way out. So he really, at 30 years old, my dad took me by the hand to my first meeting. And we went down to Rapidan in the graveyard. And I'll never forget, I walked back in through the graveyard and I seen all the people sitting around in tombstones. And I said, man, what the hell I got myself into? But I didn't say a word, you know. We went around and introduced ourselves, and I did say, my name is Curtis, and I'm an alcoholic. And I said something I hadn't done in all that time. And so, you know, I admitted that I was powerless over alcohol, and my life was unmanageable. I said it. I was crying when I said it. And so I had worked the first step. And, boy, after that meeting, I didn't hear anything anybody said that during the meeting. But after that meeting, I was the last one to share. I'll never forget, the guy asked me, did I want to say anything? And I just pretty much threw up all over everybody what had been going on. But I got it out, and after the meeting, they all just kind of gathered around me. I was the only newcomer there that night. And four or five of them gave me their phone number, and they were sticking their hands out and hugging me. And it just made me feel so welcome. I got a cousin now who wants to go, but she says she won't go without somebody going with her. She's been to a couple meetings in Charlottesville, and she says she gets to the parking lot and sees the people and turns around and leaves. And I was going to go with her, but I've been on the trains last 30 days. And I said, just go on. I said, them people are going to welcome you with open arms, you know. But she's just scared to death. Because I tell you, if my dad hadn't went with me, I probably wouldn't went in. That's scary business. I'm full of fear, and I can see where, you know, people would do that. They would leave. I was in Hagerstown on the, laying over on a railroad not too long ago, and I pulled in the parking lot, and I was like, I seen all them people. I was a little intimidated myself, and I'd been back for a year. But I went on and went. But at first sight, I said, man, I could just go on back to the hotel. You know, that's how I think. I'm just being honest, but I made myself go, and next thing you know, it's just like that first meeting down at Rapidan. Everybody's got the handout. Some of them give me their phone numbers, and I tell them I'm here out of town, and so it's good stuff. So after that, I got hooked up with a guy from down there, and he was my first sponsor, and after I got to riding around with him to some of these meetings and stuff, he brought me up here to the Blue Ridge Speakers Group one night, and he said, you know, you lived over there in Orange and this and that. He said, you ought to make this your home group. I said, man, what's a home group? That don't sound right. And he said, you know, you need a home group. And he told me a little bit about what a home group was. So I come up here and asked Billy, I said, could I be in y'all's home group? And they said, sure, we're going to get you a job. and we meet at 4 o'clock. We used to meet at 4 o'clock, and I have a meeting before the meeting, and I got mixed up in this home group. Next thing you know, I was lost in AA, and me and the other boy, we kind of went our separate ways. He was a good, he really helped me a lot, but I found somebody in my home group to sponsor me, and that way I could see him every week, and we could talk every week, you know, and that home group kept me accountable, you know, and I had like a network of people around me, and when they see you, they know if something's wrong or not, and you know, they can tell if Matt's had a bad weekend, he comes dragging here all sorry at, I know something's wrong, so we all get around him and talk to him, and that's how it works. And so I ain't gonna lie, I believe that saved my life. And doing service, it gave me the opportunity to get into the jail, gave me the opportunity to make coffee. I was definitely scared of getting up in front of y'all, and I had to get up here and open these meetings and close them. And so just little by little, they could, you know, kept pushing me, and next thing you know, some of that fear was leaving. So my sponsor and I started through the steps, and had to take a good look at some of the stuff and that I was carrying around, and I had to take a good look at what was my part, and then I had to go make some amends. And thank God I had a sponsor to help me with some of those amends, because I may have made some of the wrong amends. So we worked through the steps and got some of that stuff lifted off my shoulders. And then next thing you know, I had a guy ask me to sponsor him, and so that was just that much more of a lift. So I guess what I'm saying is, if you don't have a home group and you don't have a sponsor, and if you're not sponsoring anybody, you might want to look into it. And I would start with the home group. It's for me, it's the only way to go. If I want any kind of peace or serenity in my life, I have to do it. So my wife and I got divorced. I got a new girlfriend. I got a new job. Just a midlife crisis. I quit building houses, and I had an opportunity to go work for the railroad. So I went. I'm a conductor on a freight train, and all this good stuff was happening to me. I left all that old stuff behind. I could see my kids when I wanted to, and things were starting to get back right. So I would say three or four months before I had picked up a five-year chip, I started kind of laying off my meetings a little bit. I would go into 4 or 5 a week. I was going 4 a week, and y'all know the old story. And next thing you know, I wasn't coming to my home group and doing my service work because I was too busy on the railroad. And so then one day, me and this girl went to the beach, and nothing was wrong with me. It was just, I was fine. It was a perfect day on the beach. And she drinks. And she asked me to go get her a beer. And I went up to the trunk of the car and got her a beer. And I had one myself. And that was it. 2 days before I had 5 years. And so I came back, and the following day I called Sam, who's my sponsor, and I told him what had happened, and he said, good luck. You know, if that's what you got to do. There wasn't really nothing to be said. It was done. And so the first 2 weeks, I kind of controlled it a little bit. I would come home, and I would drink a couple on the way home. By 2 weeks, I would drink about a case a day. And 11 months, I thought dying would be an easier way out. And that's the truth. Mm-hmm. I could not control it. I had a supervisor come up to me at work. And, I mean, I was eating Tic Tacs, chewing gum, everything at the same time, shaking. And I'm thinking, this is my last day here. And somehow or another, somehow or another, he didn't catch me. And they usually, they'll do random tests for alcohol, and I just, in that 11 months, I didn't get one. So, I called old Sam. He answered on the first ring. I said, Sam, I'm done. I'm dying. I can't do it no more. And he said, Mr. Matthews, I've been waiting for your call. He said, come over and see me on Sunday. So I come on back over here on Sunday, come dragging ass in the door, and there everybody was, just like when I had left. And so I've been back now for a year, and well, I guess it's been almost 3 months now. And I got get right back into it. I was working from Alexandria to Lynchburg, so I had a truck. I got an extra truck down in Lynchburg, and I don't have to be at work till 10 o'clock at night down there. So I go to a meeting up here. I go get on the train in Alexandria. I take it to Lynchburg, sleep during the day. I take that old truck and go to a meeting in Lynchburg, and then bring one back. And, I mean, it just works perfect. 5-6 meetings a week. Them people down there are like family to me. I mean, they love me. I love them. And if something was going on down there, I mean, anything, all I'd have to do is call somebody. They'd be right over at the hotel to get me. And so, and it's just a good thing. I switched jobs here in the last 2 months because I thought I could make a little bit more money. I could make a lot more money and a whole lot less work. It's just a what we call a long barrel. You just ride. You don't have to get off switching cars and everything. And so I'm making $1,500, $2,000 more every 2 weeks and no work. I mean, to an alcoholic, that's like a pretty damn good deal, right? But they call my train before I can get to a meeting. And so for the last month, I've only been making about 2 meetings a week. And, man, I'll tell you, I can feel it. I can feel it. You know, I'm feeding them old squirrels. And when I ain't feeding them squirrels, they get crazy, you know, with this spiritual stuff. I wasn't getting that. I wasn't getting it. And so I talked to, I was talking to Sam again, and we thought, you know, maybe the money and the less work's not what you need. Maybe you need a little less money and a little more work. A little work ain't hurt me. I worked hard all my life. And so, so I decided I was going to try to get back to my old job. And when I made that decision, wouldn't you know, the night after I decided to do that, the next day, a guy bumped me that was more senior than me off this job. And the guy that was on my old job was less than me. So I made the move back over right to my old job like that. And then I had my old truck up there in Hagerstown because I thought I was going to try to make some meetings in Hagerstown. I said, crap, now when I get back to Lynchburg, I won't be able to get around. And a conductor called me that night and said, hey, man, I need a ride back to Lynchburg. What's this truck doing up here? I said, take it on. So when I got off the train down there the first night, my truck was sitting in the park. I said, man, what's going on here? Yeah, you can't make that stuff up. It's crazy. You cannot make that stuff up. So anyway, that's not everything, but that wraps up where I've been here lately. I've been going through kind of this girl and I had to go our separate ways. You know, she likes to drink and she likes to drink pretty heavy. I don't wish she is, and I don't drink anymore. And I had to decide if I could live like you. I either had to accept it and go on with it, or, you know, I had to go the other way. And so I decided I couldn't live like that. So she had to go, and so that's been kind of tough here lately. They give me a little taste of what my wife had to live with for 15 years. You know, I think sometimes the old master works in mysterious ways. Maybe has a little bit of a sense of humor, and yeah, that's been tough. I tend to, after I quit drinking, obsess over different things, these relationships and what we say, finance, romance, or self-esteem. Yeah, if it comes to any of those things and it's going against me, I'm going to obsess about it, just like I did my drinking. In some ways, I think that love stuff's harder to give up than drinking. I mean, it's tough business. And so what I got to do? I get 2 meetings a week, ain't going to do it. I got to get up to the table. A lady told me down at Lynchburg one night I was sharing. She said, man, if you sharing, you sober. And, you know, I would sit in the back, not saying nothing and this and that. And she said, boy, if you sharing, you sober. And so I started opening my mouth a little bit. Even if I ain't got much to say, at least I can maybe put my 2 cents in to help somebody else. And I'm feeling a little better. This stuff's kind of passing over. You know, when you're in the middle of the storm, it's hard to see. And so I have to talk to some of these guys in my home group and stuff, and they tell me that my feelings ain't real, you know, sometimes. And that's hard to see if you're the one in the storm. So anyway, I'm about running out of stuff to say. I got one little story. I'll tell you this and then I'll sit down. I was sponsoring a young guy here not too long ago, and he wanted it pretty bad, I think. He had 7 months. He would have had 7 months September the 9th, and my son was in a bad car wreck one night. I got off the train, and my wife had called, and she said, Trent's been in a bad car wreck, and you know, they rolled it over and this and that. She said, but he's okay. I said, she was thinking that. She said, well, on the way to the emergency room now, but they checked him out. He's going to be okay. And I was like, man, thank you, God. Thank you. And nobody, I guess, wants to get that call. Well, the next day, I got a call from this boy that I was sponsoring. He was 22 years old. His girlfriend called. I didn't even know who it was. And she said, did you hear about so-and-so? And I said, nah. And she said, well, he was killed in a car wreck last night. And I said, man. You know, I don't know why all this stuff happens. I don't know why my son made it and this boy didn't and this and that, but I know he was working hard. I asked her, I said, did he die sober? And she said, as far as I know, he hadn't been drinking. I think they were just carrying on in a car and it got away from him. And, but we were going through the book and I had texted him, and the last text I sent him, I said, was, man, don't forget to pray today. And he texted me back and he said, I won't. And then that night, I guess it had happened because I texted him the next morning, and he never texted me back. And I would say that every day. Don't forget to pray today. I think he got a kick out of that. And the following week, I woke up one morning, and I was all up in my head about this stuff with this girl and this and that. And I thought, well, man, what am I going to do? I'm going to have to help somebody today. So I had been seeing this old boy sleeping under the bridge out near Culpeper, and I said to myself, you know what, I'm going to go down here and help this guy out. This hurricane's coming. This is a week before the hurricane. I'm going to go down here and help this guy out. And so I had my boy back from college, and we went over to Walmart, and we bought like $50, $60 worth of stuff. And we bought him a tarp and some soup and some Oreo cookies and some crackers. And 2 bottles of wine and a bag of dog food. He had an old mangy dog with him. And so I bought him a little bag of dog for that dog. You know, I could see him because we were going past him. Nobody else could see him. He's laying down there sleeping on that concrete. And I said, man, it's going to be a rainy week. And maybe this will get me out of my head. And so we took that stuff over there and I hollered over the bridge. He finally stuck his head out and he said, what do you want? You know, I said, I got some stuff up here for you. Gonna be a bad storm. Come on up here a minute. And so he come up out from under that bridge and he looked like he'd come up from out of a groundhog hole. I mean, he was nastiest, filthiest thing I've seen in my life. He was red with mud. His old hair was just red and mud caked in it. And I looked down in there and to me it looked like a groundhog hole. And so he come crawling up out there, and he's barefooted, and old clothes all ripped up and nasty. You know, and to tell you the truth, he kind of scared me a little bit. It kind of scared me a little bit, because I didn't really know what to expect. He come up there, and he said, hey, you know, I was down there. I said, well, I work on the train. I see you. I see you when I go back and forth. I said, look, man. I said, a hurricane's coming. I said, I got you a tarp and some food, and I got you some wine in there. I said, maybe they'll help you get through this week. And he said, you know, thank you and this and that. And he still was a little leery about me, and I was leery about him. And I stuck my old hand out, and I shook his hand. And I said, my name's Curtis. And he told me his name. And I said, this is my chance right here, you know. I said, I got you two bottles of wine in there. I said, maybe it'll take the edge off when this storm comes in. I said, I'm an alcoholic. I can't drink that stuff anymore. And I was waiting for him, you know, maybe we could. And he looked me right in the eyes. He said, man, he said, I feel sorry for you.
That's true.
That's happened just the other week. So I got a brand new truck sitting up on the road. I got my son with me, so I got my family back. I got nice clothes on, and I'm going home to a nice house. And this old boy, I got an old mangy-ass dog, and barely any clothes on, barefooted, living in the mud. And he feels sorry for me. But that's where it takes us. I can understand that, you know. It's funny, but I understand what he's saying, because for 38 years, I felt the same way. You know, I feel sorry for you. So anyway, I'm going to pass. Thank y'all for letting me share.